The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Check this out. Just in a matter of like 2 minutes between this screenshot I took and then the Hungry Bowl, which I went on right before that, in a matter of those 2 minutes, Ethereum then dropped from 1229 to 1208. Bitcoin dropped from 24.3 to 24.1. And that's how fast these things are dropping right now, where they're just losing another percent, 2%, like in a snap of fingers.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? There has been, probably will continue, a cryptocurrency crash. Of course, you've been probably monitoring the market decline. Where are we headed? That's a big question. You know, Peter Grandage, who joins me on just about every other Friday, he's going to be stopping by this Friday. He predicted this. He predicted the future of crypto. He's talked about the decline, and I actually sent him a text earlier today, and I said to him, hey, you know what? You were right. You were right. We talk about this all the time. And he says, you know something, Drew? He says, most people said to me a year ago, yeah, I know you're right, but I hope you're wrong. And I was one of those people. I know he's right, but man, I hope he was wrong. He says, I ended up being right. I'm not thrilled, but honestly, honesty is always the best policy. He says, more surprising, he says, is when people said, you know, get out of all bonds when interest rates, more surprising, the people, when I said to get out of all bonds when interest rates were virtually at their all-time lows, people lost 20% owning bonds now. He says, have a good show. I'm going to talk to Chris Temple. He's going to be stopping by in a second here about this. I just want to get you plugged in. I don't know what it's costing you at the gas pump, you know, if prices are going up. Your air conditioning is going to go up. Your food costs are going up. Diesel's going up. Transportation costs are going up. It's going to impact your cost of goods and the stuff that you're going to be, you know, buying. It's tough. I don't know how you're handling what's going on in the economy right now. We can certainly talk about it. I heard about one mother who said, one daughter said she couldn't go visit her mother who's in a nursing home anymore because it's just too much money. It costs too much to drive and to see her. So she has got to cut back on those visits. There was one school who canceled half of their soccer tournaments because parents can't afford it. Just to give you some numbers, Friday, right? The Department of Commerce, they came out and they reported that inflation hit, I think it was 8.6% last month. When Joe Biden took office, I think inflation was, 1.8? It was something down there. It's now 8.6. Far more than economists had predicted. And today, the markets again lost big. The Dow down nearly 3%. If you are retired, or maybe you're getting ready for retirement, you're putting money in that 401k or 403b, it gives you a pause, right? The NASDAQ was down 4.7%, and apparently S&P 500 said that they have now officially entered into bear territory. They've lost nearly 4%. So it's giving, I think, a lot of people pause. Is it temporary? When will we get through this? Well, on top of that, right now, and this is concerning too, if you have credit cards or student loans, if you're looking for a mortgage, the Federal Reserve Board is meeting later in the week. This will be a big news story coming up, so be on the lookout for it. They claim they may raise interest rates way more than that 0.5% that they discussed. They could raise it a full percent, I heard. You know, it could go 0.75%, it could go full percent. I don't know what we're going to see, but that's going to clearly have an impact on a lot of people. Then, just one other note here. The price of gas, right? According to AAA, it's now $5.01 a gallon. AAA said they have never seen this since they started collecting data 22 years ago, and they said they have more calls for people running out of gas. I guess, you know, you don't have money to put in your tank, you're riding on your fumes, and you're hoping you can get to point A to point B, or maybe to the gas station, but you're going to push it a little bit further. They've had more calls for fill-ups than they've ever had. But do the math. I don't know how big your gas, you know, your tank is, 16 gallons, 18 gallons, 20 gallons. Let's do some easy math, right? 20-gallon tank in your SUV, your minivan. Maybe it's almost empty. It's probably going to cost you it's going to cost you close to $100 at $5 a gallon, right? 20 times 5. Over $100 to fill up that tank. So I know people are trying to increase their gas mileage. They're slowing down on the roads. They're not accelerating as hard. They're going below the speed limit. I'll give you one other tip. Make sure your tires are inflated properly. I had to take a road trip with my wife. We had to attend a wedding. And I did that. And, you know, it makes a difference. You know, the Biden administration, too. It looks like some say, and Chris will give me some perspective on this. And I don't know where you stand on this. You're more than welcome to dial in and sound off. Some people believe that this is, how do I put it? It's part of the Biden administration plan. It's as simple as I can put it. The White House recently announced that they're starting an initiative to install 500,000 vehicle charging stations across the country. Okay, see, when the pain gets so difficult at the pump, when prices go so high, people are like, oh, I can't afford to put gas in my car. You're charging my car, it'd be a lot cheaper. So is this part of an agenda to force people to go green, to get solar panels, to get more windmills? Right now, if you just look at the electric car market, considering that there's 1.4 million plug-in electric vehicles on the road in the country, 500,000 charging stations seems like overkill. But it seems like the administration, their plan is to keep gas prices jacked, keep them up high, so you're almost forced to say, well, do I buy a gas car or do I just go electric or get some sort of hybrid? And of course, you know, who doesn't want to have an electric car if it's cheaper and it's better, if you can afford a new car? But can you afford $50,000, $60,000, $65,000 for that electric car? I think it's beyond the reach of a lot of people. You're going to be putting a lot out of your pocket on a car payment. All of this, though, is hitting people, I think, are just getting by paycheck to paycheck. And when you got to pay $80 or $100 or $60 for a tank of gas, it's hard when you're making $15 an hour. You're working, you know, three jobs at that rate. I know people who are making $16 an hour, and I'm thinking, how are you getting by? How are you doing that? You know, between your food and your student loan and your rent, and it's tough. I'm joined by Chris Temple. Let's get his take on this. He's editor and publisher of the National Investor. You can find out more about him at this website. It's nationalinvestor.com, nationalinvestor.com. And he's here to give us a perspective on everything from how high inflation is going to go to whether or not we're on the brink of a recession to what's going in the crypto market. There's a lot to talk about. So feel free to join me if you'd like to as well. 888-914-9149. Hey, Chris, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, my friend. How you doing, Drew?
I'm okay. I am. I've got a little bit of concern when I see what looks like a perfect storm. So many different things brewing and all coming together on the American people at once. But first, before we get into like gas and the economy and inflation, I want your take on crypto. I don't really know where you stand on that. I know your friend Peter Grandage was not a big fan of it at all. I've had other guests on who think crypto is really the way to go, and we saw this crash, this precipitous drop in it. And the market, of course, was down today, too. Your take on crypto, and what drove the number so low? Bitcoin, it was like down to $26,000 a coin. It was at $68,000 not that long ago. Give me your assessment. I'd love to know what you think.
Well, my view has pretty consistently, Drew, been the same as Peter's. I've never liked the modern-day cryptocurrencies. In theory, I'm in favor of anything that is honest, interest-free, and will take some of the money power away from the Federal Reserve. Yet these cryptocurrencies have just become massive speculations. And the best analogy I can use, and I used these things when I was a kid, you remember what the old minnow traps look like, where it's like a wire mesh thing and you got an opening where minnows and tadpoles can go in, but then it narrows and they can't figure out how to get back out. That's what these markets are like, especially the cryptocurrencies. You know, they were all geared to do great when everybody was buying. But when the music stops, there's not a lot of chairs. And the Fed, as it has done with the broad markets, exacerbated this by creating such obscene amounts of money, way beyond what was needed, way beyond what they should have done. Everybody but them knew it as time went on. They finally now do acknowledge it themselves. So part of this is somewhat of an aberration, because should the Dow or should the NASDAQ have ever been 16,000? No. Should Bitcoin have ever been 60-some thousand dollars per? No. But they got driven up that high because the Fed was goosing everything for so long. And now that these things are unraveling, it looks like Armageddon. I mean, just jumping ahead quick to the NASDAQ.
Sure.
We're still well above the level of the NASDAQ, which was back then deemed very healthy when the pandemic hit. We're still above that level. But there's going to be some other issues, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But look, the cryptocurrencies, I would not touch them with a 10-foot pole. There are so many opportunities out there with good companies and the stock in those companies with real people, real assets, real technology, real promise to improve people's lives. Someday I hope that one or more of these cryptocurrencies finally do fulfill the promises that were made when they started as being legitimate alternative right. currencies. But all they have been is speculations. And quite honestly, people right now who bought them, not for any social idea, but because they were greedy, it was a greater fool theory. I hate to say it, they deserve what they get.
Well, let's do this. We'll take a few calls for you as well. What's your take, too, before I jump into the phones, on whether or not there is an agenda at play? I mean, I want to be clear where I stand. I'm all about being a good steward of the environment. I think we need to be. I think God entrusted this to us, and we need to make sure we don't destroy it. And if we can somehow get to a point where, you know, we can reduce carbon emissions and our footprint and you know, go in a greener fashion, I think that's great. However, you know, I think that's got to be a process. There's a transition in that. You just don't go cold turkey and something like that. And we've seen the connection to energy and national security and to the economy and a whole lot of other things that are now at play. Your thought on what we are seeing? Some argue that, you know, the Biden administration doesn't really mind gas prices being over $5 a gallon. And some say it's going to go even higher. They are getting ready for electric and they want Americans to buy in. Where are you on that?
Well, I'll tell you, the Biden administration and the Democrat Party mind the high level of gas prices because it's going to get them annihilated politically in November, all else being equal.
No, I agree
beyond
with that.
Beyond that, when a president comes out shedding his crocodile tears, he's a bald-faced liar with some of the things that comes out of his mouth, very disingenuous with others. You know, you can look at videos of him, very easy to find still on the internet, where he swore when he was running for president he was going to totally shut down drilling for new oil and gas projects. The other day he says, well, there's 9,000 leases out there and these people aren't drilling, they're not paying their taxes, they're not investing their money. Why? Because his Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, and you need to read my website about this. I just, again, covered her background of why she got this job from Joe Biden. She is using Treasury as a cudgel against the fossil fuel industry. So it is patently, patently disingenuous when the president comes out browbeating the oil and gas industry for buying back stock and racking up profits and not investing and so forth. Yet the Treasury Secretary he appointed has discouraged finance people from putting money into these things. That's the fashionable thing to do. It's blown up in their face for a lot of reasons, almost all of it self-inflicted by the Biden administration from these policies themselves. We've not had a new refinery built in this country in over 40 years. So there's all these bottlenecks. Yeah. And yet they have these amateurish school child like sound bites they throw out and hope that against hope, honestly, that they deflect attention from their own idiocy. And yes, I think in the context of a Janet Yellen, of the president's interior secretary, they do have a very overt agenda to run this energy economy into the ground and then force us almost at the point of a gun and a much bigger crisis than we have right now to take whatever they got on the shelf that they want us to do next.
That's terrible. All right, my guest today, Chris Temple, will go to the phones. If you want to join us, you want to sound off, ask your question, share your view. It's 888-914-9149. Denise is listening to us in Chicago, Illinois. Denise, good afternoon. You're on the air with Chris.
Hi, Drew. I love everything he said. He took every word out of my mouth. Yeah, it's the greatest forced transition we've ever had in history. Remember, we were told all during the campaign, I'm not going to put one penny into production of fossil fuels. He shut off the pipeline. They have they've told us right now the most important thing to the American people is January 6th. Oh, my God, we have to talk about that. That's the biggest priority of America. No, it isn't. It's trying to fill up your gas tank. It's trying to buy groceries. That's what matters. And this has been forced on us. We have 80% fossil fuels, coal, and oil and gas. Gas, coal, oil. That's our consumption. We can't just transition to electric in 2 years. It's impossible. But he's making fools out of us. And this whole – and he's got Pete Buttigieg saying highways are racist. What are you doing about these crisis, the real crisis of energy in this country? Yeah. Nothing.
Right, Denise, thank you. I sense your great passion there for this. And she, I think, is not alone. Chris, there's a lot of people out there who feel the same way. To your point about what's happening here, I think about 2% right now uses electric. We run on fossil fuels right now in this country. There's going to be a bloodbath come the midterms, and I'm convinced of that. So it makes me wonder, how real is what's happening here? Is this just temporary? Will things change after we see, let's say there's a red wave in the midterms? There'll be the general election, 24 months after that, practically. So what's the role of politics in terms of impacting the economy? How bad's the damage now, and how long will it take us to recover?
Well, look, Denise made a good point about this January 6th circus, which there's been already a few points in which the people running the show have been caught doctoring videos, doctoring information. They're desperately, I mean, their answer to everything that these people themselves have screwed up is it's always orange man bad. We got to save you. And this kind of nonsense. And look, I was never the Orange Wonder's biggest fan myself, and you know that.
Right.
But this is ridiculous. Look, you made a great point a minute ago, Drew, that yes, we do need to look at conservation. We do need to be less consumptive. The United States of America has just under 5% of the world's population, yet we use a quarter of the total energy used in the entire world.
Yeah.
So there needs to be a discussion about how we economize, how we do become better stewards. But look, these people that are running this show right now, they have done virtually nothing to set up the food chain necessary so that we can have the green economy of the future, which I'm not opposed to. All right. But the same president and his administration who have done such damage to the fossil fuel industry, now trying to deny it and rewrite their own very recent history, they have shut down or stopped the development exploration at several projects in the U.S. that would give us massive amounts of our own battery metals.
Yep. That's a great point.
And so look, you can't have that both ways. I think that if things turn out as it looks like they will, and there is a massive takeover of the House and Senate, both by the Republicans, the hope we've got to have, and we're going to go through more pain in the markets between now and then, we're going to hit a new record, I believe, before summer is over for crude oil in nominal terms, which we're only $20 or $22 from that right now. Gas will be closer to $6 than $5 by the end of the summer.
Wow.
But after we go through all of that pain and Biden and the Democrats are punished deservedly for that in November, the hope we have to have is that a Republican House and Senate pull Biden away from the loony left, bring him back toward the center where he traditionally was in most respects, and we actually put sensible policies in place to get us out from under this new energy crisis, which, again, is almost entirely self-inflicted.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. We'll grab a few more calls. Patrick's listening to us in Monterey, California. Hi, Patrick. Good afternoon.
Hi. Yeah. Maybe I'm a dunce or something, but in order to make electricity, you have to burn fossil fuels. And when you burn fossil fuels to turn it into electricity, you lose energy. Yeah. I don't get this whole electric thing.
Here's the thing, Patrick. I mean, that's not entirely, you know, accurate. You know, you can get you can generate energy from wind. You can get electricity from water, from hydro. You can get it from nuclear. There's lots of ways of going ahead and doing that. And Chris, I you're probably, I don't know if, you know, you're an energy expert. I don't know how far off we are from going green. And economically, does it put us at a disadvantage? You know, you take a look at India, take a look at China, you take a look at some of our big economic competitors that are out there. They're not abiding by any of this new Green Deal stuff. You know, they're all worried about, you know, their economy and their bottom line. And again, as we've said, I always want to qualify. It's important that we do what we can to be good stewards of the environment. But, you know, when we are competing on the global scene right now, how are other nations responding in light of the U.S.?
Well, a lot of them recently, and you alluded to that with China, even Germany, which claims it wants to be so pure and so green. Germany is using more coal than they have in a while because the idiocy of this proxy war that they're in the middle of against Russia, which is a whole other story. All of the other stuff that Germany did, you know, when former Chancellor Merkel said they were going to stop their nuclear energy program. So what do? They import energy from France, which is three quarters of the whole country's output is nuclear energy. They're the best example of that on the planet. Yeah. So, look, I think that because of necessity and because everybody has done such a lousy job policy-wise, because there's been too much politics right. And wokeness and all the rest of this stuff involved, a lot of things are happening right now that shouldn't. Yeah. The tragic thing about this, Drew and Patrick, is that the technology exists. It's moving on. CNBC put out a great documentary just in recent days on the renaissance coming in nuclear energy, which is going to be one of the single biggest solutions to carbon emissions going forward. You know, wind and solar power are okay, but there are limitations there. Electric vehicles are their limitations. I think one of the points Patrick was trying to make is that there's some hypocrisy and ignorance both there, where, you know, when you plug in your Tesla when you get home tonight, are the electrons and whatever charging your Tesla, do they come out of some pixie dust in the ether?
Yeah, that's
or
a good point.
You have to plug into utility.
Yeah, it's back to Patrick's point, and I think, you know, he actually made a pretty salient point now that I think about that. It's true. There's other ways to generate electricity, but the electricity that people are charging their EVs with, you know, what's powering that? I mean, is that what's behind that? Is it coal? Is it petrol? I mean, what is it? I mean, what's generating that electricity? I never thought of that. The other end of that. That is a fascinating question. It really is. Chris David, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you want to get in, the number's 888-914-9149. Taking a look at the economy, rising gas prices. Inflation is on the rise, 8.3% right now. The Federal Reserve is going to probably raise interest rates. We'll talk about what that means to you, to your loans, and to your bottom line. That and a lot more coming up straight ahead. Stay with us. The conversation continues. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Real faith, real talk. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. Trying to give you a look at life you won't find anywhere else. Coming up a little later, too, I'll share with you a personal experience, just a God's providence. When things get dark like this, it can really rob you of your hope. But there's always hope. But I also want to be a realist. You know, I don't want to bury my head in the sand, and I don't think you do either. Are we on the brink of a recession? How high is inflation going to go? What's driving it right now? Can we kind of pump the brakes on that? Will prices come back down? Again, we are seeing gas prices, which I know affect all of us, continuing to climb higher and higher. I've invited Chris Temple to join me. He's the editor and publisher of the National Investor. You can find him at that website, National Investor. Com. And Chris, I do want to talk to you about inflation too, and also the Federal Reserve. Let's deal with the Reserve first, because what happens if they do raise interest rates? And we're expecting it. We thought maybe 50 basis points. It could be as much as a whole percent. Will that get a grip on inflation? Will it exacerbate it, make it more difficult for people? What do you think they're going to do? How high will they go? And what do you think is going to happen?
Well, until this morning, and you get my emails when I sent out a new issue this morning, I said I was starting to warm up to the idea that the Fed, because of those hotter than expected inflation numbers from last week, might go more than the 50 basis point increase that they've already, you know, promised and everybody expects. But this afternoon, I think that was pretty much clinched because, you know, for X number of days, I forget how many it is exactly, Drew, before a Fed meeting, they go into what they call their quiet period. And no, none of these Fed officials come out with their incessant gobbledygook and whatnot, which in a way I'm happy about because it gets to be ridiculous after a while. But there was a story in the Wall Street Journal this afternoon that most people are looking to right now, where one of the sources the Fed usually has, if they want to plant something out there that they can't have traced directly to them, was put out basically saying that, yes, they're more than likely to go beyond half a point. Because here's the problem when you get right down to it, that addresses inflation, the fact that, yes, we are going into recession, which the Fed has told us, and not, you know, almost bluntly, that they may cause in order to get inflation back down. But look, Jerome Powell is one of the great arsonists of all time. In 2.5 years, less than 2.5 years, the Fed created 30% of all the dollars ever created in the entire history of the United States of America. All to supposedly save us from the pandemic, keep everything afloat and so forth. They obscenely overdid it. Everybody knows it now, including them at long last. And so now they got to put, you know, do the best they can to get some of that toothpaste back in the tube. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I can leave people with today, if you don't take anything else away from this discussion, folks, don't think that the Fed's job now, in their mind, is to save the stock market. Mm-hmm. That is not their primary job. The only way that they are going to stop the course of action that they have now, where Jerome Powell is now fireman instead of arsonist, to try and put this inflation out, is if something badly breaks in the markets. But they are fully understanding of the fact that they're going to cause a deeper bear market. They're likely to cause a recession. They need to get this inflation back down because that is the political imperative. You know, I had a friendly argument with a buddy the other day, a colleague who, you know, he was denigrating Jimmy Carter. And I said, look, I think Carter's got one of the worst bum raps of any president in my lifetime, because he didn't start the inflation and whatnot that he still gets blamed for by history. Richard Nixon and Nixon's Fed chairman, Arthur Burns, started that. At least Carter hired Paul Volcker as Fed chairman to try and stop it. Mm-hmm. What did the Sleepy Joe do? He put the same arsonist back in charge and says, okay, now for me, you're going to be a fireman because you got to get this inflation under control. Yeah. And that's the Fed's job. And if they have to cause a recession, they'll do it. If unemployment goes up, they'll do it, because being the main cause of this, mm-hmm. they're the one that's going to get this under control, but not without some pain.
Yeah, there was a ton of money dumped into the economy over the past several months. And as a result of that, of course, we're seeing, you know, too many dollars chasing too few goods, and that's inflation, right? I'm curious, though. You said something about the future of the market. And I know there's a lot of people who live, you know, on their retirement, they have their 403Bs or their 401Ks. There's people who are putting into it. And quite often, you know, people want a dollar cost average. They want to continue to buy even in these downtimes. But I've heard a lot of experts on the air recently, just today and over the weekend, say they're out. They're not putting any more money into the market right now. You know, they're going to sit on the sidelines. Some people are trying to camp out in bonds. For the average investor, the person that's listening right now that is, you know, having money taken out of their paycheck for their 401k or their 403b, what advice should you give them? Just keep going the course, even though you are predicting that the market's probably going to continue to go south? Did you hold off for a little while, or what's your advice?
Well, for people that have retirement plans like that, unfortunately, they're sort of severely limited as to the choices that their employer gives them of what they can do. So for the average person right now, until we get to the end of this new bear market, you've got to be putting your new contributions in cash. Take what you've got right now, put it in cash. I shared, though, last week, I think it was, with your pinch hitter, John, when I was on mm-hmm. your show, that there are entire sectors of the market, though, that are worth investing in. Energy still is. I mean, look, a day like today, pretty much everything gets hit. But I like this theme of the new fangs that I've talked about, the things where prices are going to stay elevated no matter what the Fed does. Energy, metals, commodities, agriculture, all of these various themes. My subscribers have cleaned up. We took some profits a while back near the peak on uranium and nuclear energy, which I alluded to a few minutes ago. So, you know, if you've got one of those kind of retirement funds, folks, don't be complacent. This bear market is not over yet by a long shot. We're probably going to double the declines when all is said and done. When you look at the NASDAQ, the S&P, and the rest from what we've already seen happen. But while that happens, there are going to be pockets of strength in the market. You've got to be nimble and get those.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. We'll take a few calls. You want to join us, 888-914-9149. Barbara in Dallas, Texas. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Well, I heard you say something about metals. That's what I was going to ask you about. Gold and silver, land, what else would you is that something that you're recommending?
So, Barbara, let me show you. I was going to say, so your question is it good to invest in gold, silver, or land? Is that your question for Chris?
Yes.
Okay. Chris, I'll let you respond to that. Gold was down, I think, $42 today or something like that. I mean, I'd love to get your answer to that. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering if, as well.
Well, the perception of the markets, let me talk about gold specifically. Silver kind of gets dragged along with it most of the time because silver wears two hats, an industrial metal and a precious metal. But gold is also a monetary asset. The best analogy I can give you as far as what gold is going to do is go back to 2008. When everything crashed in 2008, gold went down with everything else. It had recently peaked at $1,000 an ounce. It crashed down to below $700 an ounce, but it was first to start moving forward when the dust settled. And in less than 3 years, the gold price tripled to over $1,900 an ounce after the 2008 crash. And the reason was, and you've got to keep in mind that you may, as a gold bug, have a certain view of gold, and you're always bullish about gold, but you're a tiny, tiny, tiny minority of the massive investors out there. All right, the massive investors, generalist investors, everyday people, you've got to figure out what's going to get them to invest in gold. And what happened back then was that you had this bust, recession, market crash and whatnot. The Fed started printing money. We learned what quantitative easing was for the first time, et cetera. Yet the economy was still dead in the water. So anytime the Fed is net printing money, ask yourself, where is that money going? During healthy times for the economy, that's going to go into, and it did until recently, go into mm-hmm. cryptocurrency, stocks, other commodities, etc. But when the economy is so damaged and the Fed prints money and it's not having any traction in the economy, it's going to go into gold. So look, I think gold itself, not so much gold stocks yet, although I've got a number on my list for their own individual reasons. Gold is still kind of in a no man's land. It dropped today with everything else because the dollar and interest rates shot up. Yet last Friday's decline for the market, gold was up almost that much its low of the day. Right. So it's bottoming here. I think that the last line of defense for gold technically on the charts is between $1,750 and $1,775 an ounce. It may get back down to there once the Fed announces it's going to be more aggressive. In fact, I'd bet on that outcome. But if you see gold decline with everything else after the Fed meeting and it holds the fort in that area and then continues to, that's going to be your back up the truck time, because I believe, Drew, that we're months, not years, away from the end of this Fed tightening. They're going to get aggressive and talk tough and act tough. for as long as they get away with it, but they will break something in the markets. When that point comes, is going to be your backup to truck time for gold and some other commodities, because the Fed will have to run up the white flag and say, okay, we broke something. Now we got to go the other direction again. And this time we'll add a zero to the quantitative easing program that we come out with.
That's crazy. The U.S. two-year treasury yields, they rose, I believe, above the 10-year borrowing costs. And we have that so-called curve inversion that often, you know, heralds, if you will, economic recession. And again, we have these expectations that rates may rise faster and further than anticipated. Where are we with the recession? There was a survey done last week with some chief financial officers at a number of companies, and they all predicted, yeah, we're absolutely going to have a recession next year. The only detail they deferred on is when it would actually happen. Would you agree with them? How long do you think we're going to be in it, and what would it look like?
Well, it depends. We've got to answer that question two ways. First of all, if, for sake of discussion, Drew, if the Fed does go overboard now in the tightening direction and they break something, you've got an emerging market default someplace, there's already stress in Europe's credit markets. Mm-hmm. You've got their CDO markets and the others that measure derivatives and things like that. There's cracks over there already. Emerging markets with the dollar going to a 20-year high, et cetera, they're under increasing stress. So if you had another 2008, that would make the recession that would result for the overall economy worse. If, on the other hand, again, for sake of discussion, if the Fed can tighten a few times and the markets stay functioning and there isn't any major debacle among asset classes, then yeah, I think we get a mild recession. I think inflation does come back down. There's no way we're getting back down to 2% unless everything does crash for a while, because there's a lot of structural reasons why a lot of things, including energy, are going to stay very high in price. So we'll see what happens. I mean, that we're going to go into a recession, I think, is inevitable. Whether it officially happens, you know, as early as next month, if the second quarter GDP is negative like the first quarter was, that's the official definition of recession. But look, it's going to be uneven because there's still a lot of liquidity out there. Look at what's happened with retail sales in the recent past. As many stores as not are reporting lousy sales. Their stock prices have gotten killed. They're having trouble with costs. Inventories have burgeoned. So, you know, for the foreseeable future, a lot of these department stores are going to have to cut prices. That'll help a little bit. On the other hand, gas prices are at records. And I'll tell you, yes, you've got examples of some people who are cutting back travel, but you know what? The average American, I'm speaking in general terms still, the average American was locked up stir crazy for 2+ years, and they said, you know what? I don't care if gas is $105 a gallon. We're taking that trip this summer now that we can do it.
Yeah.
But hey, we're not going to remodel the den. We're not going to buy new appliances. So you're going to see a very uneven outcome for what does come down in price and what doesn't. And it's not going to be your garden variety recession, even when it does come.
I have a friend who's in construction, and he was telling me, he remodels kitchens, baths, that type of thing. And he says, you know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, can you do this? Goes at home, and they're shocked at the cost of what things cost today. So you're right. People will be putting things off till they save a little bit more money or deciding what they really find is important. Final thought from you here too, Chris, just on how we face this stuff with our faith. You know, as Catholics, we all have concerns. We all have to eat and pay our bills. But I think our faith gives us a little bit of an edge.
Well, it does. We know that in the end, the good guys win. So that's maybe an overly simplistic way to put it, but I just had this conversation with a friend over dinner. Look, I think that what we need to do, especially as Catholics, dust off the encyclicals of Pope Leo the Great, understand God's ways of how we fix this economy. Republicans aren't going to do it. They'll be less bad, maybe. The Democrats certainly aren't going to do it. Capitalism is not going to do it. Socialism is not going to do it. But what has long been described by those who have studied it and embraced it, as I have, third way economics, which is Catholic social and economic justice teaching. I would encourage everybody in this audience to go and learn or relearn that, because we can be evangelists. We can be people in our communities, and we can be people who help bring this discussion where it needs to be, where we will have some legitimate fixes for this economic mess that the Fed has given us, that Joe Biden has given us, and both political parties over the years have given us.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, Chris, thanks for being here. If people want to check you out, get in touch with you, nationalinvestor.com, best way to connect, right?
Absolutely.
All right, check out Chris Temple there. He's the editor and publisher of The National Investor, and you can learn more at nationalinvestor.com. As he says, I get his email, and he's been on point, so check it out. I think it'd be well worth it. I have to take a short pause. When we come back, though, I want to follow up on what Chris said there. I think it's important. God's providence. You know, when things get dark and grim and you wonder how you're going to make ends meet, when, you know, you think the numbers just don't add up. What are we going to do? I'll share with you what some of the saints have done right after this.
The hope lives here. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
You can't be a half saint, be a whole saint, or nothing at all. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Great to be with you today. Thank you for thanks for joining me. Speaking of saints, let's talk about what they did in times of difficulty. I mean, we're called to be people of faith, right? I mean, I know you're wondering, man, I've got kids in school. I've got doctor bills, student loans. I've got to put food on the table. How am I going to fill up the car? And it can be really stressful. When we put all of our trust in things that are temporal, sometimes we can really get overwhelmed by anxiety and by fear. And God is always there to provide. I want you to know that even in the darkest, most difficult times. There's a great story about Father Solanus Casey. If you're not familiar with him, he was just a doorkeeper for the Capuchin Friars of Detroit. And they were going through he lived during this depression. And the friars ran a soup kitchen to which a couple hundred people would come a day. And there was absolutely no food left at all. So a friar came up and told Father Solanus, hey, you know, we're out of food. We got to send these people away. So don't let anybody else come in. Father told them point blank, there's no food. And then he said, wait, just wait. God will provide. And then he stopped and he took all the people there and he led them in praying the Our Father. No sooner were they done than a man came wading through the crowd with a basket of bread. But as he walked into the kitchen, the man said he had a whole truckload of food. When I was a young guy, about 27 years old, I went over to Italy. I stayed at a place called the Oasis of Peace. It was a group of contemplative people that, religious and lay and a whole bunch of people. And I'd spent, I think, a weekend there kind of praying. And they shared with me stories. They relied totally on God's providence, totally. And they shared the same story. They had the bishop coming to have dinner with them one night. And it's, look, you're in Italy. It's humiliating. They have no bread. The bishop is coming, right? And they had to try and rely on God's providence. So one of the sisters there went into the chapel and prayed. And she says, Lord, we need bread. The bishop is coming. Like the story of Solanus Casey, the person didn't come with just a basket of bread. A truck full of bread came and says, hey, we don't need this. We thought maybe you could use it. So God didn't just give him a couple loaves. He gave him a truckload. And that's the way it works. When I was a young man, I went to a place in Texas where there was a priest. And I witnessed the phenomena of the multiplication of food. And it taught me that, you know, God's in control. He can multiply food. He can multiply your finances. He can multiply your health. He can multiply anything, right? Scripture is very clear. We see in the scripture how, you know, Christ took bread. He took fish. And he fed thousands of people with just a few, right? Father Richard Thomas, and may God rest his soul, he passed away. He, for about 20-some years, organized a mission to work with these impoverished Mexican and Mexican Americans. And those who worked with him, they saw inexplicable miracles. They saw multiplication of food on dozens of occasions. And they warned me. I was in my late teens or early 20s when I went down there. I went down with a fellow priest. We worked his farm, and then we took food across the border. They said, you know, you might see food multiply. So I'll never forget this. We go to the slums of I guess it was Juarez, maybe, is where he was, or El Paso. And, you know, we had driven through some really beautiful neighborhoods where there's Mercedes and there's all this affluence. And you get to these garbage dumps, and you see kids scrounging for food in the trash, in the dump, right? And I never forget, it was me, and there was probably six of us there. And I was given like a bag of cabbage, right? And how many cabbages are in your bag, right? And the guy next to me, let's say he had cucumbers, and the guy next to him had potatoes, and the guy next to him had whatever. And we're all lined up, and these people who are starving, who are hungry, who had nothing, with their kids filled with dirt and grub and a hot, sweltering Texas day, would come up to us, and they would take, you know, a cucumber from this guy, a couple of potatoes from this guy, a cabbage from me, you know, and make their way down the line. And I thought, well, this won't be a long day. You know, we'll be out of food in no time and go back about our business, right? There had to be several hundred people that came that day. I'll never forget it. I don't know how it happened or how God did it, but everybody that came for food got it. And that bag of food that we had never seemed to empty. Towards the end, it disappeared. It's not the only time. There's a great priest who runs the Archconfraternity for St. Philomena, who's been on the program many times. He shared the same story of how, you know, food would multiply when he came to an event for St. Philomena. He had, I think he had meatballs or something. They had to count on what they had, the certain amount of milk cartons. I forget exactly what it was. They never emptied it enough. The 200 extra people showed up, and he had enough to feed everybody. But that's what happens. So you say, well, Drew, it's probably story. It's your imagination. I don't really believe that. Can that really happen? Really? Come on. Well, there were actually some people who got it on film. Not my account, but a subsequent event. And they didn't know it was multiplying until later. Nobody knew until later. When they counted everything up, they figured what they brought, they knew. What they ended up with, they had no explanation for. It's a very similar example. They were serving the ham and cheese sandwiches one day, and the woman who brought the food used two loaves of bread, and she wraps each sandwich in a napkin, and she served them at the clinic. She made 26 sandwiches. That's all, 26. When she got to the clinic, she gave 6-7 sandwiches to volunteer workers and then started passing out the rest to the mothers who were there to get their milk for their children. And Father Thomas said, you know, I was standing right beside her, Drew, and she told me that she wasn't going to have enough sandwiches. There were 26 mothers, you know, she said, that got sandwiches, but she knew she'd already given away six, seven others, and they still had sandwiches left over. So they were driving back to the house, and they gave more sandwiches to the people on the street. God can multiply. Sister Bridget McKenna, she witnessed this. You know, multiplication occurs, and it's imperceivable. That's what's so weird about this. It's a phenomenon. It's not like, oh, pop, there goes another cabbage. Pop, there's another sandwich. Somehow it's just there. I mean, it's, you know how Father described it to me? And again, this is scriptural, right? I mean, we saw this with Christ. Christ said his apostles would do a miracle similar and greater than the ones he performed. So this is not an uncommon phenomenon. You might have even witnessed this. He compared it to the unfolding of a rosebud. He says it's like a blooming of a rose. You know, it's not dramatic. It happens with a number of people, but it happens. It happens. And I could tell you probably 50 more stories. I know people that have experienced this. I know accounts that happened in prisons. I personally have witnessed it. Great, great, great stories there. But the bottom line is that God is in control. He's in control. And so often we place our trust in our bank account, in how much is in our fridge, right? How much gas is in the tank. It's hard to believe, but God can provide. When you put your trust in him, he'll work wonders. St. Faustina wrote about anxiety, right, and worry and how it wounds the heart of our Lord. Anxiety is something that really, I just think, binds God's blessings. It, you know, we've got to put our trust in God. We have to have faith. It's an example of what we are called to do, you know. And Matthew 26, right, it says, look at the birds of the air. They don't sow, right? They don't reap. They don't gather into barns, yet the Heavenly Father feeds them. So you're, you know, I want you to remember that scripture, right? How much more, scripture says, are you worth than those birds of the air, right? Than those lilies of the field. Put your trust in God, because he commands you to pray, but he forbids you to worry, right? That's what scripture tells us. Worry won't add a cubit to your life. Trust, pray, and trust a little more, and I guarantee you, God will work a miracle in your life. All right? I'll be back again tomorrow. Can't wait till we can hang out again. Say a prayer for me. I'd appreciate that. I'll pray for you. Remember, God loves you. All right? Have a great afternoon.